Thank you for supporting WBEZ. You keep public media public. December gifts are among the most important because they set the tone for our reporting in 2026. Next year, we're doubling down on bringing you stories that arm you with the facts. This journalism relies on everyone contributing what they can. Join them today at wbez.org/donate.
WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Five years after COVID first shut down everything, the ever-evolving virus is still around. But what about masking? Well, you don't see that so much anymore. But should you be? With multiple respiratory illnesses flying around and the new resurgence of measles out west, have the public health lessons we supposedly learned in 2020 just not stuck? On the line, we had Dooley Health and Care infectious disease specialist, Dr. Mia Taramina. Now, if you're a Reset regular, you'll remember she used to join us on air every week throughout the height of the pandemic with some really great advice. We started by discussing measles and the resurgence that we're seeing in parts of the country. And Dr. T began by filling us in on how serious she believes the resurgence to be.
Well, of course, it's not in our backyard just yet, but we definitely have our eyes on these numbers as they're climbing up. We've got over 300 cases in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and that area, and it's sort of a matter of time as we approach spring break travel and other things where we are going to be likely to have folks get exposed to an active case, and if they are unvaccinated or undervaccinated, this could lead to a spread that can see these numbers really escalate in a short period of time.
Yeah. Well, we didn't have any cases this year, not so far in Illinois. Last year, we saw about 67 cases in our state. Are public health officials bracing for them to return?
Oh, we certainly are. I mean, certainly the county health departments and the city health departments are having weekly and monthly conversations about numbers, about preparedness. Our own organization has gone through a protocol of developing algorithms for isolating, diagnosing, and keeping people safe. You know, this is such a highly contagious virus that we don't necessarily want people who are actively sick walking into clinical spaces without having some knowledge of what they may have. So mm-hmm. We can appropriately isolate, test, and care for these patients in the best way possible. So those are conversations that risk management and hospital infection control groups and sources like that will constantly be having conversations about.
Yeah. Well, you say it's highly contagious. Tell us how exactly measles spreads.
Yeah, so measles is probably among the most contagious viruses in the world. We talk about viruses like flu and COVID and things like that. We talk about a reproductive number, which basically means for every one case of a particular virus, how many people is that one infected person likely to go on and infect? So for the flu, every positive flu case will likely infect one or two other people. And for COVID, depending on the strain, maybe 2 to 5 other people. Mm-hmm. For every case of measles, 18 more people will become infected.
Wow.
Because it is an airborne disease, not droplets, so it's going to be something that lingers in the air for much longer. And for susceptible people in a very close space, take a classroom with under-vaccinated children. If there is one case, there are likely to be others because it's going to linger in the air and
yeah.
susceptible kids are going to get exposed. So the risk is very, very high that they will become infected.
If we got that vaccine when we were a child, do we need a booster now? Or is it just one and
Good
done?
Question. Yeah, it's not a one and done. A single dose of MMR vaccine protects against measles about 93% of the time, but it kicks up to about 97% of the time with both doses given. As a reminder, the first dose is typically between 12 and 18 months, with a second dose between 4 and 6 years, what was typically referred to as a kindergarten booster.
Right.
For those born before 1957, we have presumed immunity because these diseases were so widespread, everyone either remembers having them or they likely were exposed to so many people who had measles, mumps, and rubella that they likely carry antibodies. And then in the 1960s, we only had component vaccines, so a separate measles vaccine, a separate mumps vaccine, a separate rubella vaccine, and a lot of folks born in the 60s didn't get what they should have. By 1971, we had MMR vaccine and the recommendations that we currently have. So if there's any question or concern, especially if you were born in the 50s, 60s, about your immunity status and about your risk, you can certainly have your providers check an MMR immunity panel to see if you still have the antibodies you should have, and you can be boosted with a dose or two of MMR vaccine.
I see. You know, last year, more than 25,000 Illinois students from both public and private schools, they received a religious exemption for the measles vaccine, and that was up about 90% from what we saw a decade prior. Are you concerned about that?
I am. There are very few true religious needs to avoid certain vaccines. So what we're really looking at is folks leveraging the moral compass of their views on religion and their interpretation of the Bible to get these exemptions when it's coming from a good place. They genuinely care about their children and want to make sure they're as educated as they can about things that they're exposing their children to. But what we know on the science side of things and in healthcare is that there is a far greater risk for permanent harm and death due to the disease processes themselves versus the vaccines. So anytime we lose our herd immunity and we have less than 95% of a given population fully vaccinated, we're at risk for these outbreaks. And we have areas even here in Illinois that are under 90%, and we have schools that are under 70%. Mm-hmm. So the risk is quite high in those locations where these exemptions are largely showing themselves.
Yeah. So let's get back to talking about masking then. Is that something that would help limit the spread? Should we be wearing masks?
So you should be wearing a mask if you are particularly vulnerable to respiratory infections. Unfortunately, common masking is not going to help against measles. This is way too small of a particle. It's an airborne particle. So in the absence of an N95 respirator that's properly fit, mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to filter out measles. To the extent that we are still seeing flu and COVID and RSV cases here in our hospitals, and as we have spring break travel coming up and we're going to be on airplanes, planes and in airports, wearing a mask if you are particularly vulnerable does afford you some protection. But I would argue that vaccine is probably the best layer of protection we have, including that flu booster, the COVID booster, and an MMR booster, especially if you're in an age range where you may not have complete immunity.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm also thinking beyond measles about, you know, at the top of this year, we had folks worried about what was called a quaddemic, just, you know, with COVID and RSV and the flu and everything sort of circulating at the same time. Why don't you think, even in moments like that, why don't you think we see as many people in public masking like we used to? Remember when we had that sort of collective approach earlier in the COVID pandemic? Now masking has sort of just become this individualistic one. It's just, you know, you see people here and there.
It certainly is. We see less and less masking requirements. Even in some of the hospital settings, though, during
right.
the peaks of viral season, we did have areas of the hospital that required masking, and we did have restricted visitor access, not allowing young kids, for example, in the hospital setting during particular peak times. Walking around the hospital even today as we approach spring, I will see more than half of hospital staff and faculty masked with patient care. And that's kind of, it is individual. It's not required in the absence of being on a certain floor with a lot of transmission. But we want to protect protect our patients. We have patients that get sick with flu and COVID while hospitalized for other things. So this stuff passes even in the hospital setting. So I think that it's a mix of no longer having mandates, and there's a mix of fatigue when it came to masking. There are still mask naysayers who believe it did not help. And I think that it has become more individualized. But for folks that are pretty good about wearing masks when they are in vulnerable situations, I think there really is no harm to that. And I think the benefit certainly outweighs the possible unnecessary component if it's less necessary than thought to be.
Well, what have you been practicing, Dr. Termina?
So
have you been masking?
Yes, through the fall, probably from the beginning of flu season, so September, October, all the way through right around now where we're getting into the spring and we see these numbers come down, most of us in healthcare are masking, especially with patient care. Am I sitting with a mask while I'm typing in a private room? No. But if I'm in a room and I'm interacting with patients and families during that period of time, yes, I am masking and will continue to do so until I see these numbers fall. I have several new consults today with COVID. Mm-hmm. Is there still happening? They're still here.
Wow.
And not only do I not want to expose myself, I don't want to risk exposure and then bring it to the next patient room and the next patient room.
Yeah.
So I change my mask frequently, I wash my hands frequently, and I want to keep the hospital a safe place as well.
Have we seen any recent CDC guidance on masking?
There's no official CDC guidance that's implying that there's going to be mask mandates or anything like that. There are reminders that pop up periodically when we get into areas of moderate to high transmission that those are most vulnerable, immune suppressed, people that are under vaccinated, that they should go ahead and consider masking during those times of high transmission.
5 years later, doctor, just reflect with me for a moment while I have you. What lessons from COVID do you think we learned, or at least maybe we should have learned, that you think could possibly help us brace for an outbreak of measles if we need to?
Yeah, I think what we need to do is not panic, but also think, and listen to trusted sources and kind of try to weed out the forest through the trees when it comes to hearsay on social media and things like that. We are dealing with a highly contagious virus, and we do know that the number one way to protect against measles and mumps and rubella is vaccine. So I think being ready with education pieces and talking points regarding the safety and efficacy of a vaccine that has certainly been through the ringer when it comes to scrutiny is important. And it's important for us as healthcare providers to not only provide the best care for our patients, but also be ready to educate them on the importance of this vaccine and others, but in a time like this, the importance of that MMR vaccine. And I think it's also important to be reasonable about isolating yourself or isolating your children if there is a high risk encounter and exposure and you know your child is unvaccinated or undervaccinated, because they can start to shed that virus and start to spread to number of vulnerable people if they develop symptoms. And that's something of concern, to be able to watch and monitor for symptoms start if there is a child that's been exposed and is unvaccinated and is very likely to go on and develop the disease themselves.
Dr. Mia Termina is an infectious disease specialist with Dooley Health and Care. Always a pleasure, doctor. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Maha Ahmed and edited by Dan Tucker. It was mixed by Ari Mejia. To keep up on the latest, make sure to subscribe to never miss an episode wherever you listen. Or find us at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. I support WBEZ because of the balanced reporting and covering so much about an issue, as opposed to just the few seconds that you may hear on most other news outlets. It matters to me to hear the story more completely